Welcome to the New Zealand Foreign Trust Podcast with Kate Weiss, brought to you by Asia City Trust New Zealand Limited.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the New Zealand Foreign Trust podcast series. My name is Kate Weiss and I am the Managing Director of Asia City Trust New Zealand Limited. My esteemed guest today is Michael O'Kane, the Chief Operating Officer of New Zealand Bullion Depository. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Kate.
Michael, how can our listeners find you? Are you on LinkedIn and what's your website?
I tend to not be very public about life, but I'm on LinkedIn, literally under my name, Michael O'Kane. And you can find our website at nzbd.com. It's nice and simple.
Fantastic. So in today's episode, we are going to be looking at gold bullion and how it can be a valuable investment within a trust portfolio. So gold has always been a valuable asset to hold within trusts. I have memories flooding back to my time in Switzerland, organising armed guards, transporting gold between storage facilities in Switzerland. I remember one client who was an engineer trying to convince me that he did not need insurance on his vault at Port Franks. Tell me about your setup here in New Zealand.
We have insurance. I'll start there. So we're a small privately owned depository. We specialise in storing mainly gold for what I'd class as ultra high net worth clients from around the globe. We were started back in 2012. I had some clients who were storing out of the US and they required a vaulting service in New Zealand. So they approached me and asked me to build them a vault. A couple of years later, we spent a large amount of time with a multinational law firm located here and one of the big four accounting firms, making sure we had all of our T's crossed and our I's dotted with regards to regulations and different laws. And we opened our doors to other clients. We've been operating, well, coming up to 13 years now. And what I've found over the years is we provide a really good service for a specific niche. So clients that are looking for storage of wealth in secure environments and wanting it somewhere separate to their own jurisdiction. We're outside the standard operating sphere of bullion. Most people don't think of New Zealand when they think of gold or bullion. But that suits what our client requirements are. They're not looking for storage in the usual places. They're looking for a safe haven. So for them, gold is a safe haven asset, and we're the safe haven for storage of that asset.
So we're in a time of inflation around the world, and gold has always been seen as a hedge against inflation. So with a relatively finite supply of gold bullion, it serves as a store of value. And it's also, you know, impossible to print more gold. Although people seem to be able to produce diamonds in labs, I doubt we're ever going to be able to produce gold in labs.
You can. It involves nuclear reactors and not touching it for about 40,000 years.
Yeah, so that's not what we're sort of aiming for when we come to succession planning.
It's not optimal, no.
No. So we have some inflation around the world. So the US, the inflation rate's at 2.4, New Zealand at 2.2. Colombia, so LATAM, we're looking at 5.8%, Mexico 4.5%. But looking around the world, Argentina 209%, Turkey 49.3%. Are you seeing people buying gold bullion to hedge against inflation?
Yes, with a corollary that a lot of the short-term aspects of gold investment don't actually help against inflation. So gold is a hedge against inflation over a longer period of time. If you look at it on a 100-year scale, it's brilliant. If you look at it on a six-month scale, it's probably not the best option to go into. A great example would be that we're going into a stagflation or deflationary period now, but gold's up 28% year on year. So that's counter to what most people would think.
Yeah.
The reason being is the drivers for gold tend to be quite diverse. And at the moment, the key driver is geopolitical instability or security, if you want. One of the things to consider about the gold market are the current drivers.
Okay.
The drivers being things like geopolitical pressure, financial pressure, demand, and to a lesser degree, the economy that goes spare, that gives people the ability to buy or sell outside of what they need on their day-to-day basis.
Okay.
The biggest driver at the moment really for gold is the geopolitical pressures.
Yes.
And we could talk all year about what's going on, but suffice to say there's enough pressure there that what is happening is demand coming out of central bank buying rather than investment buying. Obviously, there's a lot of theories going on, and if you look online or if you read newspapers, everyone has their own opinion, and at the end of the day, this is just purely my opinion based on 20 years in the industry.
Exactly.
So I've seen a few cycles, and I'd like to think I understand, but again, it's speculation on my part.
Of course. In preparing for today's session, I've got about 20 different articles in here with graphs, a growth hedge, an inflation hedge, a dollar hedge, and how gold can do all those marvelous hedging things.
Yeah, I've got about a million charts, and I tend to look at them and think, well, how did you even it's like the inverse correlation of gold to icebergs in the Middle East. And I don't quite understand how they correlate, but someone's managed to do it.
The butterfly effect in gold.
Literally.
That's a fascinating look at how the central banks around the world are looking at gold and using gold to navigate through the geopolitical risks we are facing.
Whilst inflation is, over a long term, a driver for gold, it's not something I would tend to look at on a short-term scale. The big influences I've seen, and I've been doing it 20 years now, so when I started in the industry, gold was $380 an ounce, and at the moment it's $29.38 or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
The keys were the de-hedging of gold mining investments. So gold mines up until about 2006 hedged what they were producing. 2006, the price had increased to around $600. So all of a sudden the mines were going, well, this is great, we'll de-hedge, and went onto the open market, which changed the way pricing structurally happened for gold.
Yeah.
Then we had the GFC,
okay,
which doubled the price in almost 6 months. Since that point, we had about a decade of flat pricing. So the gold at the end of the GFC was around 1900. It dropped down to about $1,000 in 2014 and slowly climbed back up from 2018, 2019. COVID hits, price surges. Ironically, it wasn't the spot price, the market price that you see advertised that really surged during COVID. It was the premiums for buying physical metal took off. And the reason being that there was no production in place. So if you wanted to buy something physical, you either had to go into a queue or you paid a larger premium to get your hands on the physical product.
Yep.
And a great example at that point, 1 ounce Canadian maple coin in 2019 was about 3% above spot.
Okay.
So we're talking about $60. In 2021, you were paying 35 to 40% above spot.
Oh, wow.
If you could get them.
Yes.
So there's, again, it's when we look at gold, there's a lot of aspects to it that either don't tend to be forefront of most people's minds, or there's an element of there are things in play in the background that you need to be conscious of, because it can change things dramatically.
And I think that's the point, what you just said about it being growing 28% year on year, is always that question, oh, now is not the right time to buy gold. But if it's increasing 28% year on year, then it's always the right time to buy gold.
Well, there's the very famous saying about a tree, when's the best time to plant a tree?
Yeah.
20 years ago or today.
Okay.
So I have clients that were buying gold in the 70s when it was $40 an ounce.
Yeah.
Everything they see now is just pure profit.
Yes.
I have clients who bought in 2011 when gold hit $1,900.
Yeah.
And I know in New Zealand in particular, a lot of people were buying in the run-up in the GFC because gold became popular, it became forefront of people's consciousness, and it was going up. So everyone jumped in, hit November 2011, it peaked and then dropped. Yeah. And all of a sudden you get all these people trying to get out of the market and selling on the downward slope. The people that bought at that point and held are now up nearly $1,000.
Okay, yes.
The people that sold locked in a loss.
Yes.
So the key thing I always say about investing, particularly in physical gold, it's a long-term investment. It's not something you can, you should be considering if you're thinking about liquidating it this year or next year.
Yes.
Most of our clients look at it as a generational product.
Okay.
So I've got clients who they've bought it not for their children, not for their grandchildren, but for their great-grandchildren and okay. their children, because it's a, as a transfer of wealth, it's always has value. That value changes depending on a lot of aspects of life, but yep. the value is always there and it yes. will transfer down the generations. Yep. So, I mean, that's why royalty hold gold, because yes. it goes down the generations, and why central banks hold gold as a reserve asset, because yep. it doesn't matter what's happening on a regional or a global scale, it has value that can be transferred.
Yep. And that's naturally where you and I tie in, you know, where we overlap, because the trust is there to last for generations. You know, the trust in under New Zealand law can last for 125 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not just children or grandchildren, that is the great-grandchildren. So how do your clients pass on or look to benefit their great-grandchildren? Is it just family legacy or do they use trusts?
For us, it's a mix. So we okay. have probably 30% of our clients who are using trusts to this day. Yep. Some clients have actually moved into trusts.
Yeah.
We have a global spectrum of clients, so yeah. different attitudes to the way trusts are operated and the reasoning for having them, and also different levels of wealth. So I kind of find that at some levels, trusts are there to protect against short-term risks or extra familial risks.
Yes.
And at a different level, it's about longevity and protection over periods of time rather than external risks, if that yeah. makes sense.
And with regards to gold, you can have gold bullion or you can trade gold, you can have gold equities or fund of gold.
Yep.
Why would people consider having gold bullion rather than equity or a fund of gold?
Partly security, partly liquidity. The way I tend to look at it is an ETF or an equity is a very liquid way of holding gold. It's a great exposure to the gold price.
Yeah.
In life, there are no guarantees.
Okay.
Apart from he who holds the gold owns the gold.
Yes.
And if you're in an equity or an ETF or something similar or a fund, you're not actually holding the gold. You're holding a piece of paper.
Yes.
Our clients look at holding the physical metal as their form of ultimate security, if you want, because they own it and yes. it's theirs. And while we store it, the client is the owner of the metal, so we're yep. protecting it for them. We're not actually doing anything with the metal on without their ownership. So from that perspective, the key differences really come down to paperback gold. So an ETF or an equity is highly liquid. Mm-hmm. It's very it's an easy way to get in and out on a minute by minute basis.
Yes.
It's great exposure to the gold price, but for the higher level of security and the ability to, as I say, to transfer over generations that value,
yeah.
that's where the physical actually comes in. And even within physical, there are different levels. You can take ownership of unallocated metal, which yeah. means you're taking possession of some part of some metal that's in a production run in a facility somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
There's no guarantees that at the end of the day, what you're looking at is going to be there at the end if there is a crisis,
yeah.
but you would hope there would be. Whereas if you're holding bullion bar, so in our case, kilo bar or coin or a 400-ounce bar, that's yours.
Yes.
No one else can take it. No one else can move it. And it's yours to do as you wish. And no one else has any leverage or security over that while you own it.
And I think that's the key. If you're really truly looking at diversification, so not only are you looking at asset diversification, but way of holding the asset diversification, you want not just it all to be in banks.
Yeah.
You know, why we look at property, that difference between a physical property and a property fund, you're looking to change not only diversification of the asset itself, but the way we hold the asset and then the geographic location of holding the asset. Yep. You're not going to achieve true diversification until you separate those asset classes.
Exactly. It's like the ultimate diversifier.
Yeah.
And as an ultimate diversifier, one way to look at physical bullion is it is an alternative to real estate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tangible physical asset that you own. Unless you put a mortgage over it, no one else has access to it or ownership of it. The key difference between gold and real estate is you can pick a kilo bar of gold up, take it anywhere in the world and sell it in any currency you want. That's the advantage gold has over real estate. You can't do that with real estate, obviously.
Correct.
Particularly here at the moment where if you're in non-tax resident, you can't buy real estate.
And with regards to your facility here in New Zealand, is it in New Zealand? Is it a New Zealand facility?
We are a physical New Zealand facility. We are 4.5 minutes, 5 minutes drive from the international terminal at Auckland Airport.
So the gold is actually situated in New Zealand. It's a New Zealand sited asset.
Yes. We don't do anything outside of New Zealand. All of our program, all of our contracts are written under New Zealand law. We are very much a New Zealand run, New Zealand program.
That's very interesting. Michael, thank you so much for being my guest today on episode 5 of the New Zealand Foreign Trust podcast.
Thank you.
A lot of food for thought. I can see our listeners having a lot of questions about gold bullion and the storage thereof. Do you fancy coming back and recording another episode with me about gold bullion in New Zealand?
It would be my pleasure.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Please join Michael and I next time where we look at gold bullion and New Zealand and why New Zealand is such a good location to store gold bullion.